nobody at this level can go unbeaten for a whole season, and the reality of the championship came crashing into Rec Reading's near-perfect start to the campaign at Coventry on Friday night. Welcome to the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode 239, with your host Mark Mayo, and joining me two of the finest Reading minds to digest what was actually a pretty mixed week for Reading, because of course we had the Blackburn victory in midweek, and then the defeat to Coventry. Do that. Adam Jones joins me. How's it going, Adam?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm a bit pleased that you said finest minds. I'm not sure if I'd agree with me, but no, great compliment, and thank you very much.
That's the finest minds money can buy, and by money I mean we don't pay our people to come on the show, so take that as you wish. But no, it's always brilliant to have you guys on, and Ben Thomas as well joins us. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Typical championship week for us, really. It's very mixed bag, as we'll get into in just a second. But yeah, sort of 50-50, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll jump into the recap in just a second. Also thanking our Patreon subscribers as we are continuing this mad, hectic schedule. We were just talking off air a minute ago about the fact that it's all going to come juddering to a halt in a few weeks' time with the international break. So thank you very much to anyone who's put their hand in the pocket for that. And speaking of which, ZCZ Films, our sponsor, a huge thank you and shout out to them as always. So let's do it then. It's the first defeat of the championship season. It was Coventry 3, Reading 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, as I said then, first league defeat of the season at Coventry, and it was a classic Friday night championship Sky Sports fixture. Really, I mean, this may be getting a bit ahead of ourselves, really gave me vibes of Reading's defeat to Luton in the 106 season, Ben. Really gave me that feeling of sometimes just games go against you and it doesn't quite work out. Before we get into the detail, is this one that you think is really a massive missed opportunity or actually a potential learning curve for Reading?
I think it's just one of those games, to be honest with you, Mark. I think you're right in the fact that it was, and that was my first response as well, in terms of it was very similar to the Luton game in the promotion season. It was just a very, very odd game, really. I was kind of a bit bemused by the formation, which I know we'll talk about in a minute, but that was a bit odd. And I think when you consider all three of the goals pretty much came from a position that we'd normally kind of snuff those out, it seemed even more strange that we didn't change, really. But, you know, we kind of controversially, I think we were actually worse against Wickham when we won, 1-0 earlier in the season. I really don't think it's anything to worry about. You know, fair play to Coventry. They were absolutely brilliant on the day, considering they've been pretty woeful. And I think maybe it's kind of a kind of good grounder for us fans, you know, particularly me, because I've been insufferable the last few days and since Blackburn. But also, you know, the players, maybe, you know, you've got to be more clinical. You've got to take your chances. And we had enough chances to win the game. You know, seven shots on target was more than enough to get through, really. So, you know, absolute howler from Raphael, which very uncharacteristic of him to do that too. So I really don't think it's anything to worry about at this stage. Obviously, if we talk in a week's time and we've lost the next two games, then it might be slightly different, really. But I really don't see it as a major problem at this stage, no.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It'll come down to the bounce-back effect. We've had good teams, Reading good teams before, that have started seasons well. I remember under Steve Clarke in 15-16, started really well, lost that game to Fulham from 2-0 up at Craven Cottage, and the season collapsed. This is the similar sort of scenario, you would think. And Adam, let's talk defence first, because that probably, you know, as to whether it's defence or attack, the loss this game, it is a toss-up, really. And the goals in themselves, they feel not too terrible goals to concede. I know it sounds a bit weird, but, you know, we got a good finish for the first goal. Defence, you know, you can say Laurent, Rinomata could do certain things slightly differently, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. I would say good finish, first of all. Second goal's a good rebound. Third goal's a keeper error. As you said, Ben, it's Raphael. He's a good player. We're not going to get on his back and say that it's disastrous from him. It's an error. It's a howler. But he's not made many, if any, really, since he's been at the club. So I'm going to let him off. So, Adam, do we feel like this was a poor defensive performance when we've conceded three goals? Or was it actually just pretty average?
I think it was pretty average. I wouldn't say my God, that was a really poor defensive performance. And maybe that's partly influenced by the absolute dross that we've watched sometimes, you know, over the past 3 years or so. So, no, I don't think it was a particularly bad defensive performance. The first goal, I think we were on the attack and then they broke forward. I think shortly before was Zhao's one-on-one that he missed. Obviously, he's going to miss some sometimes. And yeah, I think maybe Rinomota and Laurent could have done a bit better, but I thought it was a really, really good finish by Gustavo Hamer. I actually saw that Coventry City fans were actually expecting him to be sent off at some point because he got a yellow card for an unnecessary tackle. The second goal, I don't think Raphael saw it until late because it came through a crowd of players. And also, just going back to the first goal before I forget, I think it was through Moore's legs that the ball went. So I think that was quite unlucky in a way. But the second goal, I think just before the corner happened, it was when they hit the crossbar. And obviously we were kind of shell-shocked by that. And then we didn't get out to them quick enough for the second goal. Raphael probably saw it late. And then they were ready to snatch up the rebound and we just weren't on it. Third goal, Raphael's mistake, of course. I saw it swerve in the air, but even, you know, Raphael on social media was saying, yeah, you know, that was my mistake. And he put his hands up and, you know, he's usually a very reliable keeper and, you know, he's going to have the odd mistake. You know, even Federici has, you know, Al-Habsi has, you know, even some of our best keepers over the years. I think Martinez even had one or two. But yeah, I don't think it was a particularly bad defensive performance, but it's good to learn from the fact that all three came from kind of shots outside the box, even though the second one was a rebound. So yeah, I think that's definitely something to work on and something that will give food for thought, I think, for Rinomota and Laurent.
No, absolutely. That's the thing, isn't it? When you come down to these games, how you concede the goals, is it a total lack of marking? You mentioned the chance that Coventry had that came off the crossbar. That would have been a really poor goal to concede, but we kind of got away with it. Let's talk, you say about chances, let's talk Lucas Zhao then, because it was really an up and down game. I suppose this is what you get from a championship striker, isn't it? Ben, there's no way that he's going to take every single chance, and I suppose it's the thing that we've come to expect of him. And he had a great chance at 0-0. The ball, it was just his final touch really before he had a one-on-one opportunity, had it saved. That was disappointing. Scored a really good goal. And then at 3-1, I think it was, I think it was a ball bounced to him in the area and he had a really good chance. He puts his foot through it or something. He probably gets a goal, but he tried to do this kind of delicate chip from about 5 yards out, which just did not work. And the other thing, not to sort of get on his back too much, but the other thing I noticed was in that very, very last play of the game when the ball goes into the box, he attempted an overhead kick, which I wasn't pleased about certainly at the moment, did not think it was the right decision as he gave away a foul. But this is the thing, Ben, we're not going to be able to score all of our chances. And to get 2 goals away from home, particularly after scoring 4 goals away in the week, shows actually that we're doing pretty okay in the attack.
Yeah, I think, you know, in previous years, we've had strikers that would have had that sort of game where they've had opportunities and missed them. And they would have just gone missing for the rest of the game and inevitably been sort of subbed off. I think really, when Zhao signed for, what was it, 5 million, I just looked at that sign and felt it was bizarre. Like, you know, I hold my hands up and say that because his record at Sheffield Wednesday was pretty indifferent. You know, I know that he broke into the Portuguese side sort of around that time off the back of a good, period with Wednesday. But I just thought 5 million for what was essentially a very average championship striker was just bizarre from us. Really, really odd. And then he had, you know, he had spells last year where he kind of came on and looked quite useful. And, you know, towards the end of although, you know, he obviously started against Stoke, didn't he, in the first game back after lockdown and looked really good and then got injured. And then we were all saying, oh, he's got to come back now. That's it. He's the number one there. But, you know, for me, the fact that he does continue to score and put himself in those situations is a massive improvement from the player that I saw, you know, playing for Sheffield Wednesday on those occasions. So I don't have any real any real issues with the ones that he did miss. Apart from, like you said, Mark, that, you know, that the overhead kick, I won't repeat what I said at the time, but I was absolutely furious with that. Really, really livid. I think the other positive thing as well is the kind of the mentality and the work rate of Puskas, because again, he was coming on with what, 80 minutes on the clock, something like that. And it would have been easy for him to just go, you know, I'll kind of come on, I'll put myself back a bit, but to score as well, proper poacher's goal, which, you know, was made by Jao, was great for him as well. So I think I said, you know, last week, it's great the goals are being shared around, but you can't really, in the same way we can't criticise Raphael too much, we can't really criticise Jao too much. I think there are other opportunities for other players to score. But, you know, he had another good game where he's scoring goals. He's up to, what, 6 or 7 for the season? Maybe 8? I can't remember off the top of my head. But, you know, he's a good player. He's someone that we desperately rely on at the moment. And he does put himself around. He does kind of hold the ball up well, and he brings other players into the game. And that's something that we've lacked from strikers in previous years as well. So I think he'll bounce back from it. I think he will probably analyse his performance a bit more and say, yeah, there are certain situations that I shouldn't be putting myself in, like the overhead kick. But I would expect him to go out with a real chip on his shoulder on Wednesday against Preston and really kind of go for it as he has done in previous games.
I think the most gutting thing about the one-on-one chance that he missed was the fact that we saw him score that exact same chance against Blackburn 3 days earlier. So it was a bit galling that he couldn't, you know, mimic his actions. But let's talk in a bit more analytically, Adam. And I would have to say that it was a game of two halves, really, wasn't it? For the first half, the game was a bit more open. It was, you know, a bit more space in the game. Reading, as a result, I felt there was a real lack through the middle of the pitch, really lacking creativity, massive gap between Zhao and basically any other player. Semedo is kind of this number 9.5, number 10.5, you could say. Like, he's not quite an attacking midfielder, but he doesn't stay too deep either. And it didn't feel like it worked so well. Then the second half, Coventry sat in and Reading had a lot of possession, but even then it didn't feel like there was an abundance of chances. That was a very different game and a scenario that Reading struggled in. And the reason I'm not too upset about that is that we're missing our three most creative, or arguably our three best attacking midfielders, Mate, Swift and Ajari, all absent for the game. Those three, you'd imagine, will start as the three behind Lucas Shaw in a normal game, whether Elise starts or not, it's up for debate. And without those players, you could see that there was that link from midfield to attack. It was just not quite as good.
Yeah, it was a real source of frustration for me seeing that team sheet and not seeing Ajari, Mate, Swift. With them, we might have won. I'm not overly sure. But I would like to give a special mention as well to Shaunay Oluko, because I think he did get a bit of stick, but I don't know, I just thought he tried to make things happen at points during the game, and to come back after years of being kind of out of the Reading side, I think for him to come back, and I thought it was all right. I thought it was an all right performance from him. In terms of Semedo, yeah, I mean, you know, when he came in, I was expecting him to be the backup, really, to Rinomota and Lawrence. So to see him come on, I think, against Wickham, because I saw him against Wickham, and for him to be in a more advanced role was just peculiar for me. But I thought he did very well against Wickham, and then didn't have a good game against Rotherham, and then had a good game against Blackburn in midweek and got 2 assists. So I thought Paunovic was completely justified to include him again, just for, you know, purely the assists. I think it's the same kind of argument for Yaku Mate. I think the fact is that he doesn't show obvious quality, I don't think, but he contributes. He gives that something a bit extra. And that's perhaps what we might have, actually, with Semedo. But I really do hope that John Swift and Ovi Ajaria and Mate are back as soon as possible, because with them we could make a real difference.
Yeah, well, that's the thing was as well with Oluko. It was a classic 6 out of 10 performance for me, and that's the thing with these players, with Semedo and Oluko, you get limited performances. You get occasionally amazing stuff, but generally speaking, you're going to get a 6 out of 10. If they do a 7, then fair play, but you're not expecting it of them because they're not the first choice players. You know, we've talked endlessly on this podcast about the fee that we paid for Oluko is years ago now. He's a completely different player, different age, different point of his career. He is not in any sense meant to be the star of this team. And when he does come into games, you're just going to have to, you know, hope that he does well. He did very well the other week. I think it was against Watford, I think he played and did really well. Didn't do so well this time, but didn't do badly either. But he's 6 out of 10 performance. Let's have a bit of good news then before we go into the mailbag. Blackburn game in the midweek, a 4-2 win. We talked about the Coventry game as a bit of a bizarre championship affair. This one was probably madder, to be honest. Every single time that it felt like Blackburn were getting back into the game, Reading scored. Ben, clinical as anything, 4 shots on target, 4 goals, and probably the game we were most daunted about as for, you know, the season so far. That game and the Watford game, I've both gone into thinking, oh, this is going to be it. Obviously not the Coventry game, unfortunately, but this one we just dealt with very well.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, it was 9 seconds that Mate scored, and he just thought, okay, we're in for a game here, and then obviously they come back on, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and I think really the we've said it many, many times before, and people have written loads of stuff for us about that, the changes from last year, but it's the mentality, because actually when you score in 9 seconds and then you concede pretty much straight after, you could have gone, well, we'll just settle for 1-1 and we'll just leave it at that. But it was just phenomenal. It really, really was a phenomenal performance. And I think, you know, anyone else outside of our fan base would look at it and go, okay, you're beating Blackburn 4-2, so what? But for me, it wasn't the scoreline, it was the fact that A, we'd won, but also the fact the players just kept going and going and going and going. And yeah, okay, we had 4 shots and we scored from 4 of them. But the solidity that the team showed and the kind of expression, the way they were playing in that system, was just absolutely phenomenal. And I suppose that's what makes the Coventry defeat so much more irritating, really, because after that game, you think, well, let's just go and do it again. But, you know, credit to the players on Tuesday night. They were absolutely phenomenal. You know, Mate was just outstanding, as we know he can be in these games. You know, we really kind of put the tennis screw on the teams around us, and it was just a real wake-up moment, I think, certainly for me and certainly for the team as well, because actually, you know, up until that point, yeah, okay, we'd beaten the teams we'd put in front of them, that's what you can do, but Blackburn, top scorers, we just completely outplayed them in every area, and I think there was a bit of a rocky patch just before half time, but weathered that perfectly, and then you know, sort of getting the, you know, letting them kind of come back in at 3-2 and then us scoring again was just absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I was delighted with it. I really, really was. And I thought, you know, okay, well, if this is how we're going to do it and this is how we're going to potentially, you know, win the P word, I don't want to say it out loud just in case it doesn't happen now, but it was just great. It really was phenomenal. And I was so, so proud to be a Reading fan. And after years, as Adam mentioned earlier, of just absolute nonsense from the team, both on and off the pitch, it was just fantastic to see. And so, you know, you did expect us to kick on Friday. It wasn't to be, but we know that we can play like that. And I think now the team know that, and obviously Paolo knows that we can do that. It's just a question of just meeting those expectations all the time and bringing players in around that are kind of on the periphery of the squad to just go, look, this is your benchmark now. This is what you need to be doing to stay in the team to kind of push us forward. So, yeah, absolutely delighted with Tuesday. Really, really was fantastic.
Well, special mention to Sky Bet as we keep going on about their decision to make the Blackburn game available on their website and then it not work and then them pull it after about 20 minutes of them. Bobby thought, oh, we'll put a championship game on. There'll only be about 20 people watching it, but then thousands, particularly Reading fans, happy to jump on the bandwagon and watch a game for free. Certainly probably overwhelming for Sky Bet. So kudos to them for their mess up on the midweek. And 9 seconds or 12 seconds, depending on who you listen to, for the Akumeite goal. I don't understand how we can end up with two massively different times. 3 seconds is quite a long time when you think about measuring something like this. You'd have thought it'd be pretty straightforward, but we haven't really got a full answer as to whether it is the quickest ever Reading goal. Obviously, back in the day, we don't know that sort of thing. But certainly in the modern period, Jimmy Kebbe's goal against West Brom in the FA Cup a few years ago was basically the same sort of time. So, you know, I'm not too fussed as to whether it's quicker or slower this time around, but massively, you know, well played to Yakimete for just having the foresight to shoot first time, I think, in that scenario, because the ball kind of bobbled around a little bit off the defender's heel. Zhao with a little touch. The goalkeeper had gone off his line. I think to think that quickly, it really shows that, you know, especially when you get to the top couple of levels of football, the quickness of the thinking is ridiculous, and it's so beyond anything that I could do myself. Adam, there's final word on the Blackburn performance then before we hear from Paunovic. Best performance of the season?
Yeah, I think it was just the way that we responded mentally. I think, as Ben said, going, you know, we could have settled for a 1-1 draw after conceding so early on. But yeah, football, as I said, is a mental game. Their keeper was making his debut and obviously wanted to come for the ball earlier on. And obviously there's been some sort of mix-up and Matey's been able to get in. But no, I think it was close to probably the best performance of the season, just how clinical we were and how we managed to deal with the mental challenge of them being dragged back to 1-1 and then being dragged back to 3-2. So yeah, I think just for the mental part of it, I think it was an absolutely brilliant performance. And I know that there was criticisms about the kind of amount of chances that we had and kind of the amount of times that we've scored. So to score 3 goals against Rotherham and then to score 4 away at Ewood Park against a really good Blackburn side, which is very good attacking wise. And to have and to be brave and to go forwards and to actually attack and get those 4 goals. No, absolutely. I think it was a fantastic performance. And, credit to the players and Paunovic for that.
So let's hear from the man himself, Veljko Paunovic, talking after the Coventry game. And once he is finished, we'll be back with some mailbag.
There are no excuses. When we win, we always say we can improve. Let's see what we can do better. And also when you lose, also you have to acknowledge things that you did good, but you still have to keep improving. And the things that, as I mentioned before, like those shots out of the box, blocking those shots, stepping up, we have to improve on that. And there are no excuses. There are only possibilities to keep learning and growing as a team and improving.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Plenty of questions this week. We've had a couple of big mailbags. It's at some point it's going to be worth a show in itself. Maybe we'll have to, you know, employ a ex-pro or something to come in and do a mailbag with us or something, because it's getting into a big old affair at the moment. And Laurie Royal kicks us off saying, the key is now how we respond. Must pick up something for the next game and rebuild. Injuries are a concern, though. Who do we miss most and why? And who else was something similar? Ben, I'd have to say that probably Ajari and Swift are the players that we miss the most in this. And it's difficult because we don't have anyone who is going to come in and replace those as that sort of central ball carrying player. Semedo has, you know, a bit dribs and drabs and he can carry the ball relatively well, but he's not going to string a pass through the defence. So I'd say that it's just that, for me, it was just that midfielder injury sort of spout that we got at the moment. Massive firework going off behind me, so I apologise if anyone heard that. And yeah, it just feels like the midfield is the creativity that we lacked.
Yeah, I mean, how lucky are we that we've got a team sheet on Friday night and we're missing Mate, Swift and Ajaria. It's just crazy for me to think that we've got 3 players out in positions that really could have done a job on Friday night. I think if we were asking this question sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago, we'd probably be saying, well, Swift's sort of out of the equation now, you know, whether he's fit or not, he wouldn't be getting into the team. And that's really harsh on him because he's been one of our kind of, for me, one of our top performers over the last few seasons. But given the performance and the way that we went on Friday night, which is anything that we can go on in terms of the last game, yeah, you would say any one of those 2 or 3 would come straight back into the side, you know, where they fit. It's very difficult, really, because my kind of personal concern is that we're getting a lot of injuries now. You know, we've been lucky with kind of a discipline record at the moment, but certainly the injuries are starting to mount up, and that's when you start to look at, you know, the squad depth and the availability. I mean, you look at the bench on Friday night, and we had You know, McIntyre, obviously Puskas, they both came on. And then you've got Southwood, Gibson, Bristow, Watson and Tetek. And I think, well, looking at that, there's very little creativity in that bench. So I think really to answer that question, it would, as you said, definitely be one of those two or three. How quickly they can come back, you would expect sort of Mate and Ajero to be back a lot sooner than Swift. But whether or not they're ready for Wednesday, I don't know. But it would definitely be one of those three, yeah.
On that note, Brightside asking, should we have made the sub sooner? A team top of the league equalises to a team low on form. Should we have brought Puskas on 10 minutes earlier than we did to really ramp up the pressure and turn the screw? I felt we sat back as soon as we equalised, which gave them back the momentum. SDS adding more a comment than a question. Paolo's use of subs seems to really give the teams a chance to turn it round, which almost paid off. But I think an attacking sub probably should have come earlier. This I would agree with. You've just listed the bench, Ben. There's only one attacking player on that entire bench, which is the nature of the beast, really, for the injuries. It also kind of shows that the under-23s don't have an attacking or an attacking midfielder option that we can really trust at the moment. We've brought on Dejan Tetek, who's a bit more of an anchorman midfielder, as I understand it. But to have just the one attacking sub, and yeah, I think it would have been nice to bring someone on earlier. Waiting until, you know, a 2-1 down. You look at Coventry's subs, they made a sub before that to try and change things around, and that did actually work quite well. So, yeah, I think it is something that we could have done. Adam, in terms of making, you know, how Paolo uses his subs, have you noticed the trend? Do you agree with the opinion that it's kind of taking him quite a long time to get to the bench?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, when we equalised on Friday night, I was kind of running through my head, it was kind of stick to the plan in a way and keep that midfield nice and heavy. And it's actually funny, really, because my lecturer at uni is a Coventry fan. And he said to me, after Lucas Joao's goal, I thought you were going to go on and dominate and win it. And for me, I didn't really feel that optimistic, but I just thought, let's stick to the plan. I know we've only got Puskas really as an attacking option on the bench, but let's see what happens. And I think the problem for me is not the subs. I think it was more the fact that we did sit back. Maybe that is because of the tactics, and maybe we did need to make a sub. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a good question. I don't know what would have happened. But judging from the consolation goal with Puskas and Joao, and their link-up play was pretty good. So, you know, maybe there was a case for that. But, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what your guys' opinions on it, because, yeah, I'm kind of stumped on this one.
Yeah, it's difficult when you've got, you know, you've got a set base of players. You don't want to, one all, you don't want to gift them a goal, and taking Winamoto and Laurent off might well have been seen to have done that if we'd have then conceded. But it depends as to whether Paunovic is going to be the sort of manager who's happy to take a point. Mark Bowen was very happy to take a point in places, and that worked quite well to his advantage in the early part of his spell. Paunovic, we'll have to wait and see whether he follows that line. Handbags, Dave Harris asking, would you have preferred to have remained unbeaten with two draws this week or one win and one defeat? Ben, I'd have to say that the win and defeat is the better scenario in my mind. Obviously, the point is, you know, better for a lot of reasons. But just generally speaking, the unbeaten run doesn't weigh too heavily on my mind. And there's two good reasons why you kind of want to get rid of it in a way. Firstly, is so that other teams aren't turning up thinking, let's end their unbeaten run. Not on ex-football. I don't know whether they really think that or not, but it feels like something they would. And second point, you want to find out, particularly early on in the season, you want to find out what your team is made of. And that's what we're about to do now. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not interested really, but I mean, it's nice to be that fan that brags about it. But it, you know, you'd always take the extra point because we know in this division that a point could get you in the playoffs or not, or get you promoted or not, and you know, negatively kind of save you from relegation or not. So you'd always take the extra point, really. As I said previously, you know, we've talked about Friday and how disappointing it was in light of the Blackburn game, but I don't think there's any manager in the land that would not take an extra point because of the nature of the game, and certainly the way that, you know, the games are so open at the moment in all divisions that you would 100% take take the win. I think you're right about, you know, being a target for other teams, and the longer it goes on, the longer you think, well, how long is this going to last, sort of thing. But, you know, I would be surprised if the players were more concerned about losing the streak rather than losing the game itself. Yeah, so I think in light of that question, it would definitely be the extra point taken, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Greenwood tweets us in saying, a fantastic start has got us all excited. Shame to lose the run, but we must remember to keep some perspective on the enormous improvement so far and not be too disheartened if we drop a few points. How many games last season did it take us to reach this points tally? Well, the answer to that, actually counted it up earlier. So what we're reading at, they've currently had 9 games it's taken us to get to, well, it actually took 8 games to get to 22 points, really, didn't it? It took 20 last year. So that's a fair old improvement. And needless to say, if we continue taking 22 points from every 9 games between now and the end of the season, we will win the league, whether that happens or not. TBC. Windermere Dave asking, allowing shots from outside the box without shutting down fast enough hurt us last night, resulting in all 3 goals. Tom HS saying, do we need to be worried about our defence? 5 goals in 2 games after 1 goal conceded in the previous 7 seems a worrying slide. 2 goals away from home have previously been enough to win these types of games. Well, yeah, as Tom says, 2 goals would have picked us up in both games 1 point if we'd have scored 2 goals twice in the last week. As it is, the Blackburn, you know, clinical nature saved us. So, Adam, the defence, I think for now, I'm going to hold off on being worried about it. We've talked about the nature of the goals. Dave's saying that allowing shots from outside the box is not a good idea. With hindsight, obviously not. But generally speaking, I'm kind of the mind that, you know, they're 30 yards out from goal. Go on, have a pop. If you think you're hard enough, sort of thing. If you think you can do it and you hit it in the top corner, fair play, I'll let you have a goal. But it's perhaps better to do that than chase them in and then leave massive gaps behind you for them to knock a through ball in. So I think for now, I'm probably just going to hold off on being worried about the defence.
Yeah, I mean, I said in my preview before the Coventry game, I said it would be nice to pick up a clean sheet, especially after conceding 2 at Blackburn, which, you know, is no real fault of Reading, because look at Blackburn and their attack. You look at Harvey Elliott, Ben Brereton, Adam Armstrong, Bradley Dack, and you think, wow, yeah, that's going to be, you know, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with going forward. But yeah, I said, I think, you know, it would be ideal to pick up a clean sheet. I think it now makes it even more important that we put in a very good defensive performance on Wednesday against Preston North End. And I think was it Paunovic who said, we defended well in the box, but outside of the box, we need to improve. So yeah, I mean, I think it's good that we've had a learning curve, but I don't think we should rush out to the attackers and leave space in behind, as you said. So, no, I'm not too worried, but it would be nice to pick up a clean sheet in the next game just to give us a bit more confidence. And especially, you know, now that Liam Moore might be out, I think it makes it all that more important.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's all about the next game. And if we can keep a clean sheet, or even, you know, if Preston score a couple of wonder goals, then I still won't be too worried. Jack Killick then, do you think the game is a case of fixture congestion and injuries catching up with us? Also, how worrying is it that we had no one off the bench who could change the game apart from Puskas? Need an extra winger in the transfer window. Ben, I don't know if you saw on the weekend, but a certain bloke called Rodrigo Riquelme turned up for Bournemouth to score an equaliser in their game against Derby, thus continuing their unbeaten starts of the league season. The January transfer window starts 2 months today. Is it something that we're going to be pretty quick onto, and a winger perhaps being our priority?
It depends on injuries and, as we said, suspensions. I think at this present time, you would, you know, if we were a club lower down, you'd be looking at sort of potentially emergency loans. I know it doesn't apply in this situation, but, you know, we are very, very short, as we said earlier, in terms of the bench on Friday night in that position. I think Aluka could do a job there. I don't know why he was sort of playing up front with Jao, really, because to me it would make sense to put Puskas in that role. I think some of the, you know, the formation particularly was a bit bizarre on Friday, really. I think, yeah, it's always good to have the players, but as we saw last year, we had loads of players that were clearly not having a brilliantly positive impact on the dressing room. So you've got to be careful, really. You don't want to stockpile players and then not be able to use them. You know, you look at Lewis Gibson, for example, that at the time it was a great signing, but no one really realised how good Morrison and Moore would be and they wouldn't get a look in. So, you know, it is very, very difficult in transfer windows, because there is a tendency of clubs across the land to just be kind of knee-jerk reaction. I think from our point of view, we just need to concentrate on getting those players fit, because, you know, say all those three are suddenly fit again at the same time, then you've got a real selection problem ahead of you. The last thing you want is two more wingers added to that list. So it does become very difficult, really. It's all circumstantial in terms of where we're at in January. But certainly for me, as I said earlier, the lack of creativity on the bench was a bit of a concern on Friday. And as you said, Mark, you know, with the under-23s, there doesn't seem to be anyone coming through in those particularly creative positions. So that's something that potentially they could look at as well, in terms of if there's someone that could make the step up on the bench or at least be around the match day squad on the games, just to kind of see how the land lies and how they could fit into that system, really.
Okay, so Michael Hunter asking, sometimes high-flying teams need to have a wake-up call. If Blackburn beat Swansea, which is a possibility, then it is all good. I think you sent that before. Blackburn lost to Swansea, so Swansea in our second. Preston are a bogey team for Reading, so it'll be a great test, which will take every inch of character to get a result. We'll talk about the boginess nature of Preston in a bit. Arthur saying, not going to lie, I'm hurting still. So thanks to everyone for getting in your thoughts and questions to the Tirelessed End. Obviously, Twitter and Facebook are the best places to do that. We'll also have any of your thoughts and opinions on the email, thetirelessend@gmail.com. And Kev O'Brien's question will round off this week's mailbag. He asked, which former Reading player would you add to the current squad? I'm saying Steve Sidwell. He would provide that midfield dynamic we lack a little, and the title would be ours for sure. Steve Sidwell, he's a really good chap, because he's probably one of the best players that's ever played for Reading in terms of how well he played for the club. I would probably say Nicky Shorey is my shout for this. Left back isn't of too big a woe with Omar Richards, but having that set piece prowess as well, I think would make a really, real big difference to be able to do that, particularly with John Swift not in the team at the moment. So, Adam, who would you go for your former Reading player in this side?
It's going to be a mix between three. My candidates are Matt Upson, because Liam Moore is currently injured. Gylfi Sigurdsson, because he's Gylfi Sigurdsson. And I'm going to go also for Jimmy Kebbe, because it feels like we need a replacement for Mo Barrow, even though he didn't play that much for the past couple of years before he permanently moved. It feels like we're missing someone who can provide a threat down the wing. And that's exactly what Jimmy Kebbe can do. So when everyone's fully fit, I would definitely go for Jimmy Kebbe, just for the way that he can, you know, take fans off their seats and just be an exciting winger, and gives us a bit of a different threat as well down the wing. I think him and Mate as well down the wings could be a massive problem for Championship defences. And he was just such an exciting player when he played here. And even though he wasn't always on it, when he was on it, he was very good. So I'm going to pick Jimmy Kebbe.
Funny you should mention Mo Barrow there. I saw earlier on that he won the Korean League with Jeonbuk today. So congratulations, Mo Barrow, the former Reading player, for your success in South Korea. Not the first Reading player who's gone to South Korea after playing for Reading, and he certainly made a better fist of it than Jamie Curison did. So fair play to him. Ben, who is your former Reading player to add to this side?
It's got to be Glenn Little for me. I think that, you know, it would just be amazing to see him in modern football, but also to kind of work inside the system that Pano set up. I think he would just run riot, really. You know, proper direct winger. I know he obviously used to play on the side of a four-man midfield, but I really think he could do a job. And with Jow as his target man as well, I think it would just be ridiculous, really. the other one, you know, from a nostalgic point of view, is Jem Karachan, because I think, you know, people always talk about Steve Sidwell, and I know Karachan's a very popular player for the fan base, but, you know, from his playing qualities, I just thought Karachan was absolutely outstanding. I really, really did. I get what Adam's saying about Sigurdsson, because I think for me, he's one of the best players that I've ever seen wear a Reading shirt. But it has to be Little or Karachan for me, definitely.
Yeah, Karachan currently without a club, according to Google, although that might not be the most up-to-date thing in the world. So, yeah, he's probably one we could pick up now if we really wanted to. But good picks. I'd certainly say that the winger shout is a good one. So if any fans would like to send in their thoughts on the Reading player they'd add or the Reading legend they'd add to the squad, feel free to do that. We'll certainly read them out next week. If you, as I say, send in to the Twitter, the Facebook or the email. So let's jump in now to News Bites and hear what's been going on around the club this week.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Okay, once again, I think I said this last week, the women's still out of action at the moment. It's Women's FA Cup final this weekend, so they're not in action until Wednesday in the Conti Cup against West Ham before they play Tottenham in the WSL. The under-23s, Ryan East scored a penalty with goals for Jaden Onan and Nahum Melvin Lambert in a 3-2 win over Newcastle. That followed a 4-1 loss at Stoke previously, so they're next in action against Crystal Palace on Monday. The 9th of November, the under-18s, they lost 1-0 to Crystal Palace on Saturday. They next face Arsenal and currently sit 10th in the Premier League South, the 13-team league, that is. So near the bottom of that, but certainly not embarrassing themselves, doing a good job. I think, as we've mentioned a lot, the academy had a lot of players taken out of it over the summer. I noticed that the Newcastle game, Conyer Boyce-Clark was under-23s goalkeeper, and I think he's still 17. So you're talking about players playing against significantly older opponents, if that is the case. Other piece of news this week is the Tilehurstend Player of the Month competition. Voting is about to open for the October trophy. Lucas Zhao, Liam Moore, Mark Morrison and Omar Richards are up for the award. No surprise to see three defenders in there. Adam, which of those four do you reckon is going to be taking home the gong?
For me, I think I might go with Omar Richards, because from last season to this season, he's just improved so much. And I think it was against Wickham. I think it was against Wickham. He had one kind of poor performance, but apart from that, he's been so reliable and he's matured so much. And, you know, just fair play to him for getting fooled as well. He did it against Coventry and he's becoming a real complete fullback. And I think he's going to be a great asset to us, definitely in the future. But as I said in one of my articles the other month, we need to get him tied down to a contract, because he has less than a year. I think he has less than a year left on his contract. And there's no doubt that a lot of Premier League clubs and perhaps top-end championship clubs, I know we're a top-end championship club, but maybe even, you know, the Premier League might pick him up. And I think we need to get him tied down. The initial signs and rumours is that he's going to commit to our club, but you know, you just never know. But I want him to sign a contract, and he would be probably one of our best signings of 2020, even though we've signed, you know, Josh Laurent and that. I think he'd be one of our best signings for sure.
Yeah, just looking now through the list of players who are out of contract in the next June, it is Omar Richards, Sam Baldock, Sonny Aluko, Michael Morrison, Tom McIntyre, Sam Walker, Tenai Watson, Luke Southwood, then also a handful of players from the under-23s. So not a, you know, not an ideal situation, but I do think that as much as it would be nice to tie down Omar Richards, I really think that the financial situation of the club slash world at the moment, and the, you know, the just basic fact that we don't know which league we're going to be in next year, hopefully, will change things and will mean that there's probably going to be some late deals being done on that. Ben, player of the month then, Zhao, Moore, Morrison, Richards, who are you going to go for?
I love the fact it's so competitive. You know, I think that you wouldn't be disappointed if any one of those players won it, really, because they do thoroughly deserve it. I'm going to go with Liam Moore purely for the fact that he was down and out. You know, from my point of view, he was absolutely finished at the club. He was, you know, I think it was the Wigan game where it was just a disaster for him, really. And he was, you know, if Bowen had stayed in the position, you have to worry about where Moore would be now. You know, would he be with the under-23s? Would he be completely service requirements? You don't know, really. But he's come back. He's obviously got a point to prove, and he's just been absolutely outstanding. You know, I'm really hoping that the foot injury is not too disastrous for him and that he's able to start in the near future. But he's just been phenomenal, really, compared to compared to what he was sort of the end of last year, definitely. So my vote would be with Liam Moore.
Yeah, just to update you on the injury front with Liam Moore, it's supposedly a foot injury that he's seeing a specialist for. So if he is seeing a specialist, it wouldn't be good for him making it on Wednesday. And this is the thing, isn't it, really? We're talking about, we've got Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes have both played the season. Also got a supposedly pretty decent Everton youngster who's not played a game yet. So hopefully it's something that the club can overcome. We're certainly set for a defensive injury, aren't we, really? We've got plenty of players to come in, so hopefully that won't be too much of a problem. Personally, it's so difficult, isn't it? I think I'm just going to go for Zhao because his goals have been so integral. Without them, probably be a 6 or 7 worse points off, or points off worse this month. It's so hard as well to pick between Moore and Morrison because it's a centre-back partnership. They come as a pair. They've developed a really good partnership, haven't they, as well? So it's very difficult, I think, to say one or the other. But as we'll find out with the voting, we'll hopefully announce it next week's podcast or the one after that to find out who has won the Player of the Month competition. And of course, the show keeps rolling on with Preston and Stoke coming up. So let's talk about those games now in Big Match Preview.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the Mad Stad, Reading versus Preston. This is, you look at the stats of Reading's games with Preston recently, and this is actually maybe one we should be looking forward to. 5 wins in a row against them. They've won 1 of their 20 trips to Reading the last, 25, 30 years or so. That'll be over. They've not won their first 5, Reading have not won their first 5 championship home games since 2008-9, 4 in a row so far. So can we match the Steve Coppell team that reached 4th not too big a promotion race to really get excited about, I suppose, that one. So maybe we won't mention it too much. Interestingly enough, Preston have won 3 away, or they've won their 4 away games in a row going into this game. So, you know, it's a difficult one. Preston are a bit up and down. I suppose you don't really know which Preston side you're going to face. And Adam, this is as a result, we don't really know which Reading team we're going to get either. So really feels like a bit of a hard one to predict.
It is going to be a hard one to predict because Preston have lost their past 2 games as well. I think they've lost all 5 games at home. Don't quote me on that, but I think they've lost all 5 games at home this season. So 0 points out of a possible 15. But as you say, they've done very well away from home. We've indeed won our last 5 meetings with them. So yeah, it's going to be strange. On paper, it's going to be hard to predict. But I think from last season, where our home form was absolutely diabolical, to this season, where we are unbeaten at home in the league anyway, not in the Carabao Cup, but definitely in the league, it's going to be an interesting one because there's no real stats to kind of point us towards any kind of direction in this one, because the fact that we've won the past 5 games against Preston is countered by the fact that Preston have been very good away from home so far this season. Maybe it's their style. I haven't watched them too closely, I have to admit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in this one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lost all 5 home games in the league this season. The only team who haven't picked up a point at home, but then they're the only team that are better than Reading away from home, according to the form table. Having played 4-1-3, drawn 1. And there's some pretty decent teams in that list as well. Beaten Brentford, drew with Norwich. So it's a tough one. Quick word as well, Ben. Saturday, 12:30 p.m. on Sky again, as Reading are now the in-form, in-groove team that everyone wants to watch. Stoke at home. And this one again, Stoke are an immensely talented team. They were kind of my outside pick for a playoff position going into the season. In terms of how they've started the season, pretty decent. 4 wins, 8th place in the table for what that's worth at the moment. And again, this is Reading at home, but with no fans at the moment, it doesn't really feel like the home advantage will really mean for much.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I've been impressed with Stoke. I think that, you know, they're going about the business very, very quietly. You know, picked up a 1-0 win yesterday. You know, James McLean, whatever you say about him, he can do a job on the pitch for you, really. But, you know, they've got some interesting players. You know, they've got, you know, Obi Mikel still knocking around. You know, Stephen Fletcher is obviously, you know, very, very competent in the Championship. Obviously, Nick Powell as well. So, you know, I would say on paper, they pose probably more of a threat to us than Preston. I think just going back to Preston, the only player really for me would be Stockley, who I was desperate for us to sign when he was available from Exeter. But yeah, I think Stoke is the tricky one in those two games. You know, like you said, with Stoke going for promotion, I think they will be there or thereabouts this year, definitely. I'm not sure they've got enough to get in the top two, but I think, you know, the way that they've gone about their games this year, they can definitely get into the playoffs. And it'll be down to game management again from our point of view in terms of how we set ourselves up to deal with the threats that they've got. So, you know, definitely looking forward to the games this week, seeing how we bounce back. And let's hope this time next week we're talking about 6 points as opposed to anything less than that, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the predictions, I suppose our confidence has gotten the better of us, because we all said we were going to beat Coventry in the prediction league last week. And Handbags and Sim were the only ones who said we're going to beat Blackburn, actually. So kind of a bit topsy-turvy. Handbags top by 3 points, then with 9. I've got 6. Sim and Westy on 4. Ollie on 3. So, Ben, do you want to go first with your prediction for the Preston game?
2-0 Reading.
And Adam, what do you think of this one?
I've just written my match preview and I'm trying to remember it. I think I went with 1-1. I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet, but I don't think we'll lose either.
Yes, yeah. It is a tough game, isn't it? I think we're going to get a 1-0 win. I'll be optimistic. This is potentially the most important game of the season, because if we do win it, then you do get a sense that this team has the proper mental strength that we've talked about. But if we lose it, you're thinking, oh God, how quickly are we going to be slipping? We'll probably be within, you know, only a couple points of the teams around us. The danger is obviously that we're 4 points clear of Swansea right now. But then if you go 4 points back from Swansea second, you go all the way to 10th. So you get that massive teams. They're like snapping turtles. Bournemouth, Norwich, Watford, all good teams. Middlesbrough on good form as well. So it is potentially the biggest game of the season so far against Preston. Let's hope Reading can do a good job in it. Thank you very much, Ben, for popping on this week.
No problem, chap. Stay safe and look after yourselves.
And Adam, always a pleasure.
No worries, absolute pleasure as per.
So Reading go into two home games with a bit of a worry on our minds. But as we've said, this Coventry performance, if we can put it to one side and get it out of our heads and go back into winning ways, then Reading will be absolutely fine. And as we get into this very busy fixture list for early November, let's hope Reading can do it and keep performing on the pitch and shake off that result. Thank you very much for joining us for episode 239 of the Tyler Stem podcast. We'll be back after that Stoke game. As I say, it's on TV if you've got Sky. So tune in, cheer the boys on from home, and hopefully when we reconvene in a week's time, Reading will be still top of the Championship. Come on, you ass.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always